Coming up, I've got one big question for every NFL division with Kevin Clark, and we're also going to talk about his favorite team in the world, the Orlando Magic. That's coming up right now. Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. Today, we are doing one big question for every NFL division with host of This Is Football with Kevin Clark. It's Kevin Clark. What's up, Kev?
What's up, buddy? It's good to see you. Long time no see.
A long time no see, Kev. I'm excited to chat with you today. We're going to talk about your Orlando Magic later today. I know that's the real reason why you're joining the podcast. But
that's why I'm first, here.
First, we're going to get to the NFL with the season starting 1 week from Thursday. Let's start with the AFC South because I'm watching preseason games. I'm catching up on the NFL, Kev, and I'm watching Cam Ward, the number one pick this year.
Yeah.
Like 5 years in college. I watched every pass he threw this preseason. He looked patient, didn't force mistakes, had only one pass that I thought should have been an interception. It was dropped left sideline pass, forced that. But he looked in sync with Calvin Ridley. He made this nasty throw against the Vikings to Van Jefferson, a 17-yard out. He looked off his target. Ball was on a rope. Amazing velocity and accuracy. So I'm wondering, what am I missing here? Like, why is Cam Ward being so under-discussed and under-hyped? Because I thought he looked awesome with the flashes he showed.
Couple things about it. Number one, your scouting report is right on. I think last year, the fact that Miami didn't make the playoffs, this is an overarching truth. Very few people follow college football. And what I mean by that is most people say they're college football fans, but they're actually just fans of the team that they went to school of, right? So like, oh, I'm a huge college football fan. No, you're an Iowa fan. Oh, I'm a huge college football fan. No, you're a South Carolina fan. No one sits there and says, and they do, you know, hey, I'm going to watch this 3:30 game, whatever, but you're half paying attention to it. You're not pouring over the depth charts, whatever. And so I think a lot of the games last year for Cam Ward, to get a true appreciation of it, you had to watch a Friday night game against Virginia Tech where he had two interceptions, really the only two traditional two interceptions he had last year. Everything else was him trying to kind of do a circus trick, kind of throwing across his body type of deal. He threw two real deal interceptions last year. They're both against Virginia Tech, but then he went on one of the best comeback journeys I've ever seen in the third and fourth quarter of that game, including one where he basically got sacked twice on a play and still threw the ball out to a tight end. So Friday night against Virginia Tech, a 10 p.m., this is no joke, a 10 p.m. Saturday night kickoff against Cal, where I think they scored 35 points in the final 20 minutes of the game or whatever. But that was the game where I was like, holy cow, this guy's going to be an NFL star. Not a lot of people were watching that. Maybe they were watching the highlights. They weren't watching the totality of it. I think that his supporting cast was overrated in the sense that Xavier Restrepo has already been cut from the Tennessee Titans. Jacoby George has already been cut from the Panthers. Damian Martinez, his top running back, was cut by the Seahawks. He was a one-man band behind a really good offensive line and then a second-round tight end in Elijah Arroyo. But I think that a conflation of a lack of team success because they didn't make the playoffs even though they won 10 games, and then maybe misunderstanding how much of the offense last year was him, because there were some big names from a college perspective on that depth chart, but it was him. He was the guy driving the engine. And so every mistake he made last year, with the exception of very few, was basically a bit. Like, it was basically him saying, like, watch this, watch what I can do. And he wasn't able to do it 10% of the time. It ended up being, I think, 6 interceptions on the year, but I've never seen a player like him. And there's a, like, I said on ESPN a couple months ago, I said I thought he was the most Mahomesian prospect since Mahomes, and I still agree with that. And part of it for me is Steve Young has this great line about Mahomes he shared on my show a couple of years ago where he said he does the Superman stuff well, and everybody talks about the Superman stuff, but what he really does well is the Clark Kent stuff, which is just hit tight ends really quickly, all that stuff. I think Cam Ward could stand to do maybe 10% more of those sort of Clark Kent passes where it's, hey, I'm just going to hit this tight end, get a first down, and live to fight another day. Oftentimes, he holds on to the ball too long and tries to get the 40-yard chunk play. That's been his undoing. It was his undoing against Georgia Tech a little bit in their one loss. They had the worst defense I've ever seen, so that was part of the reason they lost three games last year. But I think he's amazing, and I think the Titans are going to win games they shouldn't this year. And I think people are going to wonder why he was the least talked about first overall pick as a quarterback since maybe ever.
I'm glad you're seeing what I'm seeing, Kevin. I'm just getting back into the NFL.
What the draft? And buddy, at the draft, if you remember, the Titans take Cam Ward first overall. They show Cam Ward, he puts a hat on or whatever. Yeah. Immediately, the Jaguars trade for Travis Hunter, and they go, oh, we have a trade. And then they just stop talking about Cam Ward. And they haven't talked about him since. That's the last time anybody said his name on TV.
I mean, like, it's just weird to me as I'm, like, listening and watching NFL coverage. It's like, this dude seems, A, great on the field, and B, intelligent off the field. Like, he says all the right things about mindset and approach and hard work and approach to the game and a love for football. And I'm looking at the Titans over-under at 5.5, and I'm like, I don't know, Calvin Ridley, full season with him. This could be a good connection on offense. I mean, I don't think they're going to be great by any means, but anytime you have a rookie quarterback, but I don't know, man. Like, he comes in experienced. He's played for three different schools. He's a product of being a transfer in the portal. Like, I think he seems really good. And maybe by the end of the year, as you said, it's exactly as you said. People are going to wonder, why was he so underhyped?
I want to talk about the portal part of it, because I think the portal has been perhaps one of the most important positive developments in football over the past 50 years. And I think people are going to think I'm overstating it, and I'm simply not, because you think about the fact that last year, I think there were six first round quarterbacks and all but JJ McCarthy were portal guys. Michael Penix, obviously. So Michael, all of them had journeys. So there were three of them, Michael Penix and Bo Nix being the most notable, where Jaden Daniels, probably the same, but a little bit different. But Bo Nix and Michael Penix did not look like draftable quarterbacks in their first stop. And then they were able to play so much football and, more importantly, find an offense, Bo Nix at Oregon, Michael Penix, obviously at Washington, where they were able to get accentuated. Like, that's the whole thing, that's the Belichick line, right? Tell me what they can do, not what they can't do. Go to a place that was going to heighten their strengths, run routes that they were comfortable with, give them an offensive line. I always say geography is destiny for quarterbacks, Kevin. And what the portal's been able to do has been, oh, you know what? It didn't work out at this school. It might work out there. And sometimes it doesn't work, and there's certainly horror stories, and there's certainly guys like Zach Calzada I saw. He's like in the seventh year. He's on his, you know, fifth team or whatever. And I keep seeing these guys in their fourth, fifth team. And yeah, that's the downside of it. But in another life, 20 years ago, they just would have sat on the bench and not played somewhere. Okay, that used to happen, and it's fine. Now you're going to a place and you're getting starting reps or whatever. But for the NFL, they're getting way more quarterbacks because these guys are finding better homes and they're finding better environments and they're finding better playbooks. And with Cam Ward, to go from Incarnate Word to Washington State to Miami and improving talent around you at every place and the playbook at every place, it's changing football. It is legitimately changing football. And I don't think, like, Walter Clayton, I guess, is a good example in the NBA game, where he goes from Iona, which is my local school here in New York. He goes there for the to Florida. But I don't necessarily know, correct me if I'm wrong, if that's going to change the way he plays in the NBA. The portal is absolutely changing the way the NFL looks at quarterbacks and the way these guys have developed. And so I think it's as big a development as we've seen in decades, and it's helping the game, frankly, because there was a quarterback shortage, and now you're getting into places where, like, 22 years ago, Matt Castle was drafted as a USC backup who never started a game, and it was based on blind faith that USC was a quarterback factory, and that somehow practice at USC was more important than playing at Oregon State, right? Like, that was the bet the NFL was making. They turned out to be right in that situation. But if Matt Castle were born in 2000, not 1980, Matt Castle would have lost the quarterback job at USC and then gone to play for Arizona, gone to play for Arizona State, gone to play for Texas Tech. And that's what's changing this so much. And these guys are playing more football. They're getting more reps. They're starting earlier, partly because of the fact that they might transfer if they don't get that opportunity. And I think that it's huge. And I what makes me think about the one and done rule, Kev, where is that helping or hurting the game? Like, is that if you had to play 2 years in college, would the level of play in the NBA be higher? Would there be, would draft picks pan out better? Would we have more information? Like, I don't know the answer to that. And the other thing is, talking about the Walter Clayton part of it, how many guys we're seeing, it, like, if you go to an Iona and you ball out, and we've seen certain guys go from, well, I don't know what you call it in basketball, but we call it G5 in football, group of five, like, you know, a MAC team or a Sun Belt team, whatever. We've seen those guys go in the first round. But I think the biggest question is level of play. And if you don't make the tournament, a lot of times you only get two or three games of tape if it's a Sun Belt team going against a Georgia or a South Carolina or a Clemson. You only get that if you don't make the tournament. And so these guys go up a level. The scouts get to see that. There's less questions. There's always going to be Khalil Max who go to Buffalo and ball out. A good example would be Jared Verse. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he was the best defender and rookie defender in the NFL last year. He was at Albany 3 years ago. In another world, he would have stayed at Albany, and he would have been dominant at Albany. He would have been a third or fourth round pick, and he wouldn't have played anybody. And instead, he goes to Florida State, balls out against the ACC, becomes a first round pick, becomes defensive rookie of the year, probably going to be defensive player of the year candidate. And I'm curious how you view the college developmental system where the NFL is being helped by this is the NBA.
I think there's two sides of it. I mean, first of all, what you're describing with quarterbacks, it feels like, you know, especially as I'm preparing for fantasy football drafts, it feels like there's a lot of good quarterbacks, just a lot of good quarterbacks. So, you know, before I get to the NBA part, I just want to ask you this part. When you talk about there's older quarterbacks coming in, more experienced quarterbacks coming in, has it created like a larger pool of quality quarterbacks?
Yes.
Is that what it is? Okay.
It's literally created them out of thin air. And that's the important, like there was one traditional quarterback last year's draft, who was JJ McCarthy, who went 3 and out without transferring. Caleb Williams went 3 and out, but he transferred, but that was partially because, not partially, he followed his coach. He went from Oklahoma to USC. But it's creating, Jaden Daniels at Arizona State would not have been on the path. He wouldn't have had Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas. He wouldn't have had the offensive play calling. He wouldn't have had the best statistical downfield passing season in history. It wouldn't have happened. So it would have been harder to project. Those guys don't get enough reps if you don't come in with that high pedigree, and then you get flushed out of the league. Like, it is creating opportunities for guys who then become franchise quarterbacks. That is,
and he goes second Broncos, overall. Well, last year, Daniels, yes, goes second overall. Yes.
The Broncos would not have a franchise quarterback if not for the transfer portal. And I don't think Bo Nix is going to be Jaden Daniels ever, but the Broncos can win the Super Bowl this year because of the roster that they have plus Bo Nix. And that would not have happened if Bo Nix stayed at Auburn where he was being failed.
I mean, Nix played 5 years. Ward played 5 years. Daniels played 5 years in college. I mean, Penix 6 years. I mean, really unusual. But like, I think to, you know, tie this to the NBA aspect, Kevin, you know, I think it's a really smart point, because with the NBA for years, as long as I've been covering the NBA, I've been doing this since 2013, you know, since 2016, like on a national scale when I got hired by The Ringer. Every executive I've ever talked to, they there's two sides of things. They say, A, they like the one and done, because they feel like it gives them an edge, because they feel like they're better at projecting. Then there's other people who say, that's BS. Like, it's luck. Everybody's going to have their misses. We're all better off as a league if players get more time, because it means players come in more experienced, better talent, better evaluations from a front office standpoint, and therefore a better product for the fans, therefore a more entertaining, therefore more revenue. And I tend to side with that side of things. And I think that's where the NIL has been beneficial for the NBA, or will be beneficial for the NBA, because this year in the NBA draft was a bit unique because a ton of guys went back to college more than any other year that I can remember. Like, I had my top 100 ready for the draft guide, and I think like 35 of my top 100 ended up going back to school. So a lot of guys went back this year. And so that means next year's draft and the draft after that one, if guys are spending more time, it's going to lead to stronger evaluations. Now, you're always going to get your one and dones. Like in the NFL, Arch Manning would be a high pick without playing a down in college football.
Yep.
In the NBA, like Cooper Flagg would have been a high pick without playing at all for Duke last year. Yep. Just like next year, A.J. DiBonsa would at BYU. He wouldn't have to play. Cam Boozer at Duke and so on and so forth. Aaron Peterson at Kansas. Some guys are so talented they don't have to play. But to your point, having to play 3 years in college football does lead to these quarterbacks and other positional players to be more developed and more ready for the rigors of a full NFL season. I think that's where the one and done versus the time that is required as a baseline for college football players. And then with the transfer portal, promoting 4-5 years for some of those guys means even more further development. And I do think that is a dramatic difference. And it's something that I think a lot of NBA people and a lot of NBA league office people think could be a good thing if college basketball becomes more of a feeder system to the NBA, giving guys time to develop while also making money, therefore improving the NBA game over time. So I do think it could happen. Just it's a little bit slower than what's happened in the NFL, as you're describing.
Not just that. March Madness is one of the best potential star-making vehicles on the planet. The reason I say that is because it used to be. Like, think Walter about Clayton. How famous Carmelo Anthony. Well, but also think about how famous Carmelo Anthony became in 2003 by just having an incredible month that got him into international superstar status. The NFL has that. They have a star-making vehicle, which is the college football season that everybody watches. So Caleb Williams comes in to the NFL, and everybody's talking about what Caleb Williams is going to do. Why is he failing? Like, he's a ready-made superstar, which, frankly, the NBA doesn't have. Even Cooper Flagg, I don't think, reaches the heights of some of these guys who come in from college now, where they play huge games. Arch Manning being a really good example, but you're just seeing Jeremiah Smith at Ohio State, who everybody's talking about as one of the best wide receivers in the history of football, going into his second year, and he's got one more year after this. And I kind of think that the more these guys can play in college, and you know, it's been a while. And Zion Williamson obviously was a bit of a cultural phenomenon when he was at Duke, but the problem is the NBA stars are not becoming stars in college, and I think that ends up hurting the popularity of the NBA game. Like, I think I always think I was in my parents a lot, where it's like, do my parents know who XYZ is? I'll call my mom and say, hey, do you know who so-and-so is? And she's a fan. She's a football fan, but sometimes she's not going to know who the wide receiver is or whatever. But I think a lot of times for our parents, like, the way a person gets famous is their team makes the Final Four. And if your best players in the NBA the year before are playing in a big dome in April and everybody's watching it, that only helps the product, not just from a developmental standpoint where you're getting big reps and you're understanding what winning time is and all of that stuff and the process and everything that goes along with it, but it's also the fame part of it, which I think the NBA could use a little more of.
It's a great point. And I think a lot of NBA players feel like Cam Ward right now, where it's just like, oh, yeah, you know, the hardcores know the name, the casuals know the name. They know he was a high pick, but they don't know a lot about the player or the person. And I do think this is where it's going to be interesting with the NBA, with the NIL money, because you got A.J. DiBonsa going to BYU this year, making roughly $7 million. It does not compare to what a number one pick will make in the NBA when they're drafted. But like, if college schools start paying star players $10 million, $12 million, $13 million, it becomes comparable with the rookie scale contract. Could these young, talented players decide to have 3 years living their college life, becoming even bigger stars, as you're describing, getting experience in the Final Four, maybe winning the national championship, spend 3 years, 4 years there, come out ready, and still be, you know, a multimillionaire rather than starting the pay earlier in the pros? I think that's what the NBA would really love to happen. I really do think the NBA wants what you're describing.
Let me throw something out here. So the House settlement sets aside $20.5 million for athletic departments. And most people agree that the big programs are going to go over that, but you still have $20 million to play with if you're a Power Four school. And the big X factor here is that there's a bunch of teams, college basketball, that are good that do not have football teams. Georgetown. You know, just thinking about basically the entire Big East. Marquette. Think about those teams as Catholic teams that do not have a football team. If they're able to spend $20 million on a roster, you're going to be able to compete with top 10 slots, aren't you? Like, if you're able to say, hey, we're going to give one guy $12 million, that's, you can get anybody you want. You can get anybody you want. And I wonder what happens at Kentucky? What happens at Kentucky? What happens at Indiana, where they have a football team, but the focus is on basketball? What happens to that roster? What is already going to be politicking? I mean, I joke sometimes about this, but like Miami, the focus is on the football team. We got a basketball team. We just hired a really good recruiter in Jai Lucas from Duke to be the head coach. But like, I don't know, like I kind of like, I wish you well, but if I find out that we're going to lose two more football games this year because we got a five-star power forward, I'm going to storm the gates of the athletic department. Like that's a real thing, that the athletic departments are going to have to choose where their resources lie. And I've heard, you know, Duke right now is paying a quarterback $4 million a year. If they go 20-10 this year and finish fifth in the ACC, is somebody going to go to Manny Diaz and say, no more paying a quarterback $4 million a year? I truly don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, pay give it all to our basketball team. Same thing with North Carolina. I'm sure with Belichick there now, you have a great basketball team there, a great basketball history with North Carolina. Well, now you have Belichick running the football team. Could there be some politicking between the basketball and football side of things?
All it's going to take is a year where Providence College spends $20 million in a basketball roster. UNC spends $9 million because they have to share with the football team. I think that's when you start to see a sea change.
And what way? What way is sea change? Just curious.
I think you're going to see more open. So you already see it, right? Like John Calipari years ago was always saying, well, the football team gets this, and this facilities-wise. Why aren't we getting this, right? You're going to see more transparency and complaining from college basketball coaches, I think. And vice versa, college football coaches. If you're Mark Stoops and you find out Mark Pope is getting more money for XYZ, are you gonna talk about it if you guys lose to Florida this year? I bet you are. I bet it's gonna become very cutthroat, scarcity mindset. Because there is. I mean, like, in theory, it should be capped. In theory, you're not supposed to spend more than $20.5 million. And in theory, you are cheating if you go over that, but that's not a real thing in college sports. You're allowed to cheat now. The unintended consequences of the House settlement are very significant to me. What about baseball? What about LSU baseball?
Sure.
What about Miami baseball?
I think most people. There's tons of sports.
Yeah, and like that's what one thing
lacrosse?
About. Right, and like one thing that like Texas Tech is paying their football players a lot of money, but they're also paying their women's softball players a lot of money, and they're getting these portal people to come to Texas Tech. And I think that's another thing where it's like you're really I think this is hard to say, but like the age of being Stanford, where you're good at 25 different sports, I think that might be a thing of the past. I think athletic departments are going to get leaner, and you're going to see unintended consequences. And I wonder if the power concentration, especially in college basketball, becomes a little different.
And we'll be right back after this break. Steelers are over under 8.5 wins. I'm looking at this situation, Kevin. I'm seeing top 10-ish defense. They added DK Metcalf, Darius Slay, Jalen Ramsey, and obviously Aaron Rodgers. And I know Rodgers isn't the same, but we've seen Mike Tomlin go to the playoffs with Russell Wilson and Justin Fields, Kenny Pickett, 38, 39-year-old Ben Roethlisberger. I feel like with the changes and additions they've had, and then with Rodgers especially, eight and a half wins feels really low to me. I mean, is this a safe bet? Am I wrong here? Tell me what's going on with 8.5 here.
I just had Bear Felica on the show, who's a betting analyst for Fox, a great guy. And he mentioned the Steelers being one of his best bets for the overs. And part of this is that Rodgers is going to be fine, and there actually is a pretty big lack of fine quarterbacks in the NFL. There's these great quarterbacks, and there's a lot of question marks. I think Rodgers is going to be able to throw the ball. He's not going to be able to move like he did 5 years ago when he was winning the MVP, but I don't think that's going to matter. I think he's going to get the ball in the hands of his playmakers, and good things are going to happen. I think the reason I think 8.5 seems low to you is that it feels like a really good team, but to me, if I had to guess, probably going to win 9 or 10 games. And then you're kind of sweating that bet, right? Like, you're kind of sweating, hey, I hope there's no game where they fumble 3 times in December. Like, I think you're going to be sweating 8.5. And that's why I would stay away from that bet. I think it's a 10 win team.
Interesting. So you'd pick the over, but I'd be sweating the over is what you're saying.
Yeah, I think they're going to be sitting at the type of team that's going to be sitting at 8 wins going into the final 2 weeks of the season.
Okay, I see. Okay, understandable. And yeah, Rodgers is not the same.
Tough division. Bengals are good. The Ravens are probably going to win the Super Bowl in my book. AFC is really deep. Some of the names are bigger than the production at this point. I think Jalen Ramsey's good, not great.
Not quite the same anymore. Like Rodgers.
I don't have a lot of conviction. Yeah, I don't have a lot of conviction on the Steelers. And then they're going to be the same team they always are.
We didn't see Rodgers in preseason. Can you tell me, like, is there any chance now another year removed from his injury? Like, maybe he's not panicking in the pocket anymore? Like, could he be back closer to his panicking prior?
Yeah, it's not about panic. He can't move like he used to. And so, like, that's the issue, is that, like, he used to be able to buy time and then sling it down the field. He can't buy that kind of time anymore. So you saw last year, second quickest release of his career last year. He was just getting the ball out really quickly, which can work. Especially if you have playmakers. We'll see what the offensive line is all about, but it's not as good as the Packers when he was winning the MVPs. So I think he's going to get the ball out really quickly. I think you're going to see a lot of tight end usage, a lot of some deep shots, because he was able to get rid of the ball quickly with deep shots last year. Probably be able to see a little bit of that this year, especially with DK Metcalf running vertical this year. But I don't think he's going to be like an MVP candidate. He's going to be the 15th best quarterback in the NFL, which can get you to 10 wins.
All right, the AFC East, you spent time at Buffalo Bills training camp. Did you learn anything that either makes you more or less confident that this year the Bills get over the hump?
They're going to win the division. I'm pretty sure your Patriots are going to finish second in the division.
Just thinking
about it, Ellen.
Let's go. You know what surprised me since moving back to New England, Kev? There's a lot of Buffalo Bills gear in stores. Like, there's a lot of Josh Allen t-shirts.
What are we doing?
In the front. I know. It's kind of disgusting, to be honest with you. I mean, are we just forgetting about 2 decades of constant success and constant winning? There's a lot of Josh Allen
there's
t-shirts.
There's a lot. Like, I say what, there's in a lot. Front of I live stores. I live in Giants country, and there's a lot of Josh Allen fans here too. Especially kids.
I mean, he's very likable. He's a likable quarterback. And I've seen kids wearing Josh Allen t-shirts too.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you what's interesting. So when I had a kid, I was talking to Bill Simmons about something a couple months into having a kid. And I was telling him, well, I'm in Yankees country, Giants country, Rangers country. And he said, let me tell you something. He said, you think that they're going to be into all this stuff? They're going to root for players, not teams. That's just what kids do now. And the more I see kids in my neighborhood, the more I think he's right. Like, they don't, like, there is like an undercurrent of like Yankee fandom and Giants fandom. And there's still kids who go as Tommy Cutlets for Halloween and stuff. But like, it's a lot of Josh Allen, a lot of Joe Burrow jerseys. Like, living in Giants country ain't what it used to be. Is the data that I've gathered over 3 years being here. Also, the Giants stink. That's part of it.
But with the Bills, did you learn anything that makes you think they're gonna? More or less confident about them getting over the hump.
They got to retool the defense. The reason they addressed the defense so much was because I feel like they just need to find a way to get stops. in January. And Brandon Bean, their GM, said, look at the Super Bowl. The Eagles were able to get an early lead and then just pin their ears back and rush the passer. The Bills want to be able to do that. I still think they're not there. I still think the Ravens have more of a capability to do that this year than the Bills do. So if I were to rank the contenders, and it's a distinction without difference, they're all going to break through at some point. But if I were to rank the contenders for likelihood to make the Super Bowl this year, I'd go Ravens 1, Chiefs just behind them, Bills just behind that, and then probably like the Texans. But the funny thing is the Texans have a bad offensive line, but like I just had Sheil Kapadia on the show last week, and it's like the Texans have an amazing young quarterback and a top five defense. And it's like, wait, why are they not going to win the Super Bowl again? And part of that is just the offensive line and just the skepticism of it. But I think the Bills are right there. And at some point, they're going to break through. Like Joe Burrow's got this great quote. It's almost an NBA-ish quote where he says, the championship window is as long as I'm here. And I believe that's true of all of those quarterbacks, including Josh Allen.
It's a good quote. It's a confident quote. I like that quote. He's correct. Need like Anthony Edwards to steal that this season for the Timberwolves or something.
That's how I view my quarterback tiers, which is who props open a championship window wherever they go. And like how many guys, I'll put it to you, how many guys in the NBA can go to the Wizards right now and prop open a championship window? What's the answer?
It might be zero. It really might be zero.
Really?
Yeah, I think it's zero.
We're putting Giannis on the Wizards.
No,
we're putting Giannis on the Wizards.
No, I don't. It's zero. I don't think you can put Jokic on the Wizards and they're a championship contender. I think they are a finals.
Are you
contender
really?
I don't think the Wizards stink. They're so young. No, I think you put Jokic on the Wizards. They're like in the East Finals, but they're losing to the Cavaliers, a deeper team. Because, and this is the thing. This is what happened last year. OKC, Indiana, Boston the year before that. In the NBA right now, it's you need 7, 8, 9 guys. It's not just one star anymore. It's not just about your top two, top three, and then a bunch of league minimum guys like the Heatles in the early 2010s, where it's LeBron, Wade, and Bosch, and then a bunch of dudes on the league minimum. It's not like that anymore in the NBA. So I think you can't put Jokic on the Wizards and expect
what seed,
them to win
what
the finals.
Seed, what seed does Jokic, Wizards,
I mean,
Jokic get?
The East is so bad. They're probably the...
Like a five seed?
Three or four seed. I mean, I think Cavs and Knicks would be ahead of them. Your Magic probably ahead of them as well. So the Wizards plus Jokic, I would not pick them to win the finals. So it's, the answer is zero. Whereas in the NFL,
no, but that's not. It's not about. It's not necessarily, Kev, about whether or not you'd pick them to win the championship. It's do they prop open the championship window?
Sure.
It sounds like you're saying zero, but yeah, but I don't. But 48 isn't a championship contender for me. What I'm saying is I have Mahomes, Allen, Burrow, Lamar Jackson, Jaden Daniels. And my point is that they prop open a championship window in Cleveland. They go to Cleveland right now. They prop open a championship window. And the reason I said Jaden Daniels is because he just did it with the Commanders when nobody was talking about that this time last year. He just did it. They could have made the Super Bowl last year.
Can't expect
and now
that
Jokic
type of
in this hypothetical
NBA
now
rookies.
Jokic like, in Washington like, is going to have the same thing.
Flag is not going to do to the Dallas Mavericks what Jaden Daniels did to the Washington Commanders. It's just impossible in the NBA, unless you're.
But you part know, of that is what we're talking about with the quarterback, with the advancement in quarterback play in college.
Sure,
these guys come in more ready because they played 5 years of college ball.
It's like Tim Duncan
at the SEC,
coming in after,
which is.
4 years of college. He comes in the Spurs
but
championship
CJ Stroud and Jaden Daniels, their proof of concept is torching a high level SEC defenses. CJ Stroud, the light came on against Georgia in the playoffs and they almost made the final. No one remembers how close that was. They almost made the final and Georgia had what is the closest thing to an NFL defense you're ever going to see in college. And CJ Stroud lit them up. And I think that's important.
In the AFC West, Jacoby Myers has requested a trade from the Raiders. What are your favorite trade fits for him?
They're not. No one has ever traded a player they wanted to keep in the NFL because of the way the franchise tag is gone. This is not the NBA. This is not James Harden shows up in a fat suit and then all of a sudden he's on a different team 4 days later.
Also, what horrible never timing happened. For a trade demand. I mean, come on.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, in theory, it sounds like Adam Thielen's going to go to the Vikings. In theory, maybe the Broncos need somebody, but the Raiders are going to keep them. The Patriots should never let them out the door. That was stupid.
Yeah,
but
no kidding. We don't know anything about the deal with wide receivers. We don't know what to do.
The Raiders need them. Geno Smith needs weapons. Brock Bowers needs more help. More guys to spread the ball around to. He's going to be a Las Vegas Raider.
Do you have any marriage advice for Travis Kelce?
He is a really good person. I only know him from him coming on my show a couple times. Big Cavs fan, probably agrees with your Cavs takes about how deep they are. We've talked on camera about the 2009 Eastern Conference Finals a lot. I think marriage is easy. Just it's easy. It's just instinctual. Just don't be dramatic and don't be just be chill about everything and things tend to work out. Same with parenting, by the way. Easier than it sounds. Once you get the hang
don't
of it.
Don't overreact. Just take it.
Don't ever get too high or too low. Just embrace the process. The number one thing I think people
embrace the highs though too, right? The good moments.
Oh, of course. But you can never be like, I've got this completely mastered.
Sure. Of course. Because something always happens.
Number one thing I think.
Unexpected.
I don't know if parenting and marriage are exactly analogous. I'd say the biggest issue with parenting is when people think that they're like, their lives aren't going to change. And they're like, oh, I'm still going to go see my friends and I'm still going to go out for dinner on Tuesday. It's like, you're not. You shouldn't. And if you do, you're either going to spend a ton of money on babysitters and then be hungover all the time, or you're just going to be a bad parent. So, like, once you realize your life's going to change and you accept that, it tends to work out. Just keep the doctor said early on, he said, just keep your baby warm, fed, and dry, and he will be pretty, he'll be a happy kid. And that has turned out to be correct.
My dad always told a story when he came home with me and my mom after I was born. He said he remembers putting me in the car seat in the back, and he said, well, life's never going to be the same. I how can you not have that feeling? I mean, there are people who are so delusional to think that they're going to be able to do the things that they've always done pre-baby.
Oh, I'm not going to change. Obvious. I'm still going to be one of the guys. I'm still going to be one. No, you're not, bro. No, you're not. You're not going to be one of the guys. It's over. It is over. But it's better. Being a dad is better than being one of the guys. What are we doing? Nothing being better. One of the guys. Well, you're 45 and you're one of the guys? What are we doing? Tend to a family. All right. That's enough. This was an AFC West conversation.
I hope I'm as lucky. I hope I'm as fortunate to someday be a dad. Let's move on to the NFC North. Yeah, someday I will. Let's move on to the NFC North. The Bears.
All the lovely ladies of rural Massachusetts.
Yeah. Hang on. I'm trying. I'm going on dates.
All right.
I'm putting in the work, putting the effort. I'll find somebody eventually.
Embrace the process. Never get too high or too low, okay?
I don't. I'm an experienced dater at this time. I never get too high or too low. When I get too high, that's when things go wrong. The Bears, ton of wide receivers. They got Swift at running back. They have an improved offensive line. They, of course, hired Ben Johnson. Is it crazy to think that with all these changes, like they could be a 5-12 last year to 12-5 team this year? It's crazy.
12-5 is too much. There's some really smart people who are saying that they can make the playoffs. I just think the division's too hard. The Packers are going to win that division. The Lions are going to be awesome. And the Vikings, their infrastructure is just awesome. But what I do think is, so Caleb Williams was really, really failed last year. He had the most. So he, another theory I have, but he held onto the ball too long. And part of this is because I think that if you held onto the ball too long and you were born in 1980, you got driven into like concrete, basically, with the way fields were. And now you can hold onto the ball too long and you barely get hit, right? And so these guys get to the NFL level and they don't know they have to just get the ball out all the time. So we held onto the ball too long and they put that guy with that fatal flaw behind the second worst offensive line in football. Didn't work. But he also had the most unblocked pressures since next-gen stats started tracking. So it was a marriage of awful offensive line plus Caleb Williams holding on to the ball too long. So now you're adding credibility in the offensive line and Joe Tooney and Drew Dahlman. You're adding a coach who's going to make him throw on time. And you already had the receivers. I think Rome Odunze is pretty good. Okay, DJ Moore is pretty good. So I think you're going to get instant improvement. You're getting instant credibility. You're not going to get a joke of a staff. And I think that's the most important thing. I just, instead of saying, hey, they're going to win 13 games, 14 games, 12 games, whatever, I think Bears fans just want to see that Caleb Williams is the guy. And I kind of think they're going to this year.
In the NFC South, we already had mentioned Thielen got traded to the Vikings. The Panthers, on the other side of that, they're opening up snaps for their second-year receiver, Jalen Coker. Bryce Young, it feels like he's going to have a lot of young receivers. What are your expectations for Bryce Young entering year two here?
At three. But it seems like year two because
three. Yep.
He sucked so badly his first year. no, it's so funny because it's kind of what we're talking about with the transfer portal, right? If Bryce Young were not the first overall pick, he would not have gotten as many starts to figure it out as he did. And the fact that they were patient with him, they benched him at one point, but they were patient with him. He got that chance because Andy Dalton got in that car accident. He figured it out. I think is a lesson that every coach and general manager should take going forward, right? It's the one the Colts haven't learned with Anthony Richardson and all that. That's a really tough situation. So my expectations are high. I think the Bucs are going to win that division because they have a really good roster. I think the Panthers have a chance to be second in that division. Falcons are good as well. I just think that the infrastructure is in place there. But the most important thing with the Panthers, Kev, is their rebuild is very self-aware. Very self-aware. There's no NBA team I would compare it to. I certainly wouldn't compare it to the Magic. But it just seems like they know, hey, we're not going to skip steps. We're not going to try to accelerate the timeline. And I think that they're on track, which I think if you, and ownership wise, everybody makes fun of David Tepper firing people. If he didn't care, he wouldn't fire people. He would just would have stayed with Matt Rhule 5 years ago and just said, hey, you're our guy. I'm not going to pay you $40 million. He kept trying to solve it. And I think he did solve it with Dave Canales and Brant Tillis and Dan Morgan. So I think in general, kind of what I was saying about the Bears, Panthers fans just want to see they're on the right track. And I think they will.
NFC West. Niners, the last 8 years, they have the ninth most games due to injury on average. Last year, they had the most missed games. And this year, they have a ton of injuries already. Is their season over before it's even began?
So I kept getting in debates with people. And they kept saying, well, the Niners were so injured last year. Well, the Niners were old. They are old. They got a lot of veterans. They got a lot of second and third contract guys on the team. And that's what happens. They get old. They get hurt, and they got unlucky with some of these injuries, and some of them were younger guys. But when you have an aging roster in the NFL, you run the risk of everybody getting hurt. It's very expensive. They need to rely this year on their young guys because of some of the expensive guys coming off their books, getting rid of Deebo Samuel. Brandon Ayuk is a bad contract that we saw manifest itself last year. So they got to hit on their draft picks. The one thing that complicates it for me is I thought it was open and shut this year, Kev, with the Rams. Because I thought that the Matthew Stafford return paired with how good that defense is and can be with the young players, plus Davante Adams opposite side of Puka Nacua. I'm so revved up that my AirPod just fell out. I think that to me was a Super Bowl contender. And in fact, at some points this year, I did pick them to make the Super Bowl against the Ravens. Then Matthew Stafford has his back flare up, which is the most unbelievable thing I've ever seen. As far as they don't want to give you any updates. He's got a portable back cryogenic chamber that is wheeled into the facility. There's all sorts of weirdness with it. So all of a sudden the Niners window swings right back open because it was closed because the Rams are going to win that division. All of a sudden the Niners window is back open. I think any of those teams have a credible case to win double-digit games. And if the Rams don't run away and hide the division, which they won't if Jimmy Garoppolo starts five games, I don't know, it becomes very interesting.
And last division here, NFC East, Philadelphia Eagles, of course, with the Super Bowl last year. Jaden Daniels, you mentioned him earlier. Turnaround, the Commanders, they go 12-5 last year. Is there any chance at all, like, we see the Commanders win the division this year and be the best team in the NFC? You think so?
So the Eagles, if they're healthy, the Eagles are the best team in the conference. The rosters are too good. Howie Roseman, almost like an NBA GM. He's so good at addressing problems before they happen. Probably like a Sam Presti, if I were to guess. The other thing is, and I don't know if Presti does this, but the one thing that Roseman is good at is he takes a lot of flyers on guys whose traits he likes, and then he's able to, and then one out of every four hits and good things happen. Plus, their development system is so good that they can get an offensive lineman who busted somewhere else and say, hey, we're gonna get this guy with the best coaching he's ever had. And again, 40% of those guys are gonna become incredible values, right? That's part of why they're always so good. But Jaden Daniels, to me, has a higher ceiling than Jalen Hurts. That offense has the capability to have a higher ceiling than the Eagles offense, depending on, and Saquon was so amazing last year. We'll see kind of how his usage develops this year. AJ Brown, if he's healthy, can be one of the best receivers in football. So we'll just see how that develops. But like, Jaden to me was unbelievable and left meat on the bone as far as the deep ball. He was one of the best, most efficient deep passes we've ever seen at the college level. He was not that at the NFL level. So he's got a step to take in that regard. So yeah, there's a world in which they win the division. I'm picking the Eagles just because I've seen it with the Eagles. But yeah, that's not crazy at all.
Yeah, Jaden Daniels says I'm doing my fantasy football research. Not saying he's going to be QB1, but feels like there's a chance he could be QB1 this year.
Props open a championship window, unlike Jokic in DC.
We'll be right back. Orlando Magic, they've made improvements this offseason. So the real reason you're here, you wanted to talk about the Orlando Magic. I want to talk about the Magic with you. So let's talk about them. The Orlando Magic this year, they add Desmond Bain. They draft Jace Richardson. They make improvements with shooting this offseason. Do you feel confident in this team as a contender in the East, Kevin?
Yeah.
I think so. You think they're ready for that step?
I think they're probably going to win the East, if I had to guess.
Over Cleveland. Tell me why, because I'm still skeptical about the shooting and I still have my questions about Paolo and Franz.
Okay, so I think that it's well-worn territory now that since the Dwight Howard trade, the Magic haven't even been top half in scoring. It's almost impossible. It's almost, you know what it's like a little bit, Kev? Do you know the Bears have never had a 4,000-yard passer? Do you know about this?
Wow.
And
no, that's crazy.
Like, do you know in this era how easy it is to have a 4,000? You can accidentally have a 4,000-yard passer. And then Bears
they added a game. There's another game.
The Jeff and Caleb Williams, the Dr. Justin Fields, just nothing. Nothing can happen. J.J. Keller, nothing happened. And like their rookie record, I don't even know if Caleb Williams broke this or not, but the rookie passing record for the Bears was set in like 1957, which is just, completely impossible. And but the Magic, it's like they just haven't even accidentally had a good offense, even despite the fact that they've had good players and the way Paolo and Franz have developed. It just hasn't happened. The defense has been incredible. We know what Suggs can bring you. We know that Mosley got those guys to defend in a really impressive way. But the issue has always been shooting. And now you add the best catch and shoot three-point artist in the sport. And how many open buckets is he going to get with the way Paolo drives, with the way Franz moves? I just think that offense is going to hum. And assuming the defensive tenacity remains, I'm having a hard time seeing how this isn't a buzzsaw, Kev.
I think the defense is going to be nasty. That's for sure. The defense is going to be great. So you have that as a baseline to be competitive. Offensively, we saw what this team can be in spurts last year when Paolo is, you know, healthy, when Franz is healthy, the heights those guys can reach. Adding Desmond Bane, as you said, he's an elite shooter. And then adding Tyus Jones as well, also a very good shooter, even though he's a point guard. He's a good off-the-catch guy. So he's an upgrade from Cole Anthony. Desmond Bane is a big-time upgrade from KCP and Gary Harris. Mo Wagner coming back, hopefully healthy all of next season as well. To me, I still think if I'm the Magic, if I'm their front office, I still want to add more shooting. Unless Franz Wagner and Paolo Banchero, like, they finally figure it out as three-point shooters. To me, that is the key to this team being what you think they can be, is Banchero doing a hell of a lot more what he did in the first round last year. And Franz Wagner, he's got to be a reliable shooter, Kev. Like, he has to be a reliable shooter. And like, that's the thing, one of the things I'm watching for this month in Eurobasket is Franz Wagner has been very up and down for him in the games prior to the Wednesday, when the games are beginning in Eurobasket. I want to see him shoot well. Like, he's got the yips or something. He's an elite free throw shooter. He's got great touch in the paint, but he can't shoot from three. And so if you're two star players, you've got questions about the both of them as shooters. I've got a hard time believing in the Magic as finals contenders without seeing that. But they have everything else on the roster, but they need their two young stars to become real NBA stars. That's
well,
the way
I think Paolo was hurt. I think Paolo was hurt last year. I think you saw the leap before his injury last year, and then they never really got back on track. They didn't play enough games together
until the playoffs. He was awesome.
But there was, yes, exactly. But Bane, I think, adds such an extra dimension. Let me ask you a question. Just put it to you this way. Is there a better move the Magic could have made than Desmond Bane? Which, by the way, picks. Well, they also got out of bad contracts. And, you're going to be picking 17th or 18th for the rest of your life if you don't trade those first-round picks. And all you're going to be doing is drafting guys that have a 10% chance of becoming Desmond Bane. That's infuriating to me.
It was a great trade.
As far as the takes go.
The people who criticize that are underrating Desmond Bane because Ja Morant is so overrated. Like, Ja Morant was not the best player on the Grizzlies this past year or two. It was Desmond Bane. Desmond Bane, if anything, I think you could argue, is underutilized on the Grizzlies. He should be taking 10-plus three-pointers per game. Now he's going to be involved in dribble handoff actions with Wendell Carter, Paolo Banchero, Franz Wagner, these two-man game. Like, Desmond Bane, going back to college, we were talking earlier about these NFL quarterbacks who spend more time in college. Desmond Bane plays 4 years at TCU. He becomes each year a better ball handler to become a guy. His fourth year at TCU is a high-level pick and roll creator, a guy who comes off of handoffs as well as ability to get to the basket. In the NBA, he's gotten opportunities to do that, but because Ja Morant and that Grizzlies offense has been so pick and roll heavy, so Ja dominant, I don't think we've seen enough of Desmond Bane doing those things. And so now you put him in Orlando. To me, on paper, this is like the dream fit for Desmond Bane with this Magic offense, both in terms of team need with shooting 30th in the NBA last year in 3-point attempts, 22nd in 3-point percentage, but also just in terms of what the system can be next to the other players on this team, which is why, like, again, I have no
question. You're making my point for me. How are you not picking them to be an Eastern Conference contender? What is wrong with you?
Because they are an Eastern Conference contender, but I wouldn't pick them to win the East because I need to see it from Banchero. I got to see it from Franz Wagner. I love Franz Wagner. I've said for years he has potential to be a top 20 player in the NBA. I had Banchero ranked first in his draft class ahead of Chet Holmgren, ahead of Jabari Smith. In a year, debated about who is the best prospect. So I'm very much a believer in Banchero and a believer in Wagner. But they do have to show it. They have to show it for me to put them on the level of the Cavaliers, who win 66 games last year, on the level of some of these other teams in the East Conference, the Knicks, who go to an East Finals and got better this offseason as well. Getting Gershon Yabusele, not a big name, I know, but he helps add a lot to that front court. Mitchell Robinson, Matt Kelly as well. So I'm putting them behind those two teams for now. But unless Wagner takes a step and unless Banchero does a lot more of what he did early last season. Come on. Gershon Yabusele is a good player. Yeah.
Come on, man.
You don't like the Dancing Bear? You're not a fan of the Dancing Bear, Kevin?
Come on, man. They got Desmond Bane. Okay? This is... we're talking about different stuff here. I'm talking about, here's the issue. I think we're in agreement on this. The internet seems, their default on basketball in particular, seems to be the best moves to do nothing and wait it out and have a 10-year rebuild. Nobody ever wants to put themselves out there on basketball Twitter and say, we got to do this. Nobody ever gets that way. I think everybody on basketball Twitter is afraid of endorsing any action because actions get screen grabbed and thrown back in your face by the worst people in your mentions. Okay. So it's become this default thing where we hate every big swing because we love little swings. We love little swings. We love trading Aaron Aflalo for Evan Fournier. We love little swings. Ooh, ooh. And also it's like a little bit of like, ooh, we get to kind of like we're doing right now. We get to talk about how this guy is a lot better than you think. Oh, you know, you didn't see him at Eurobasket. Okay. All right, pal. What if we got Desmond Bane?
But what Desmond if we Bane got the guy is but
who's
some
better
people,
catching and Evan, shooting than anybody, and then we get him and he's going to catch and shoot for us.
But that's the thing. There are people who consider Desmond Bane that mid-move. There are people who don't consider him
those people don't know hoops.
I would agree with that. They haven't watched enough Grizzlies basketball, don't know enough about Desmond Bane. Or spent with the Magic. But there are people, that's where the disconnect is. There are some people who are like, Desmond Bane worth this many first round picks, the third best player on the Grizzlies? That's what some people perceive it as. But ultimately, I mean, we're talking about Desmond Bane. The young guys are talented on the Magic as well. If this year is 1 year too soon, it could be next year, could be the year after that. All I know is that the Magic.
Nobody's leaving.
Exactly. These guys are under contract. At a minimum, the Magic are have one of the most brightest futures in the entire NBA. That's what I would say is a given.
Is Wendell like enough? Can Wendell be the fifth best player on a championship team?
I mean, if Wendell Carter's your fifth best player, that's pretty damn good.
Okay.
I like Wendell Carter.
I'm putting it to you. You're the one poking holes in my optimism.
I like Wendell Carter a lot. It's just a matter of the best guys, Kevin. That's what it's about. You have depth, but you also do need the star power. Like, you do need, like, OKC doesn't win the finals last year if SGA is the 20th best player in basketball or the 15th best player. They win the finals because they have a deep roster and SGA is a top five guy. And he wins MVP. For the Magic, they have the roster, they have the depth, they have the supporting cast, they have the flexibility from a lineup perspective. They have guys who can play different roles, but they need Banchero to be top five, top 10. They need Franz Wagner to be top 20, top 25. That's my only concern with the Magic. That's it. Other than that, I've got no concerns, no notes. I love the roster. I just need Banchero and Wagner to become good shooters and take a leap as stars. That's all. That's it.
What's the bet? What bet are we making? You got to give me good odds. We'll do it off.
Yeah, no. We do need good odds for you to. You're picking Magic to be in the finals. I'll pick them
to be in the East. Yeah.
That's your pick, right? To represent the East. Not necessarily to win it, but to represent the East.
I said it on
East
first take. I said it on the biggest show on TV.
I'll pick them to lose in the second round. How about that?
Losing the second round. That's a disaster. Yeah. That's a disaster. I'm glad you're pivoting. I'm glad we talked more about football in this episode because that seems like it's more your speed than hoops. Hoops might not be for you.
I know. I'm trying to get better. Trying to get better. Kevin, thanks for joining me today, man. Appreciate it. Thanks again to Kevin Clark for joining me. Just so you know, the Kevin O'Connor Show can now be watched on the Yahoo Sports Network. That's our first ever streaming TV channel. The Yahoo Sports Network is available to stream on all leading FAST services. It's also streaming live 24/7 on yahoosports.tv, where you can catch all the shows on your phone or your browser. Thank you again to Kevin Clark. Thanks to Emmy Franks for producing us. Thanks to Father John Misty for the music. We'll be back again next week. Have a good day, everybody.